Hello, what's up everybody? Jack Farr here from Farr's Views Podcast on Wednesday the 31st of January, episode 19. It's January transfer deadline day as well. We're coming at you after a long hiatus, actually nearly 2 months in fact of no podcast, which I'm really sorry about. There's been exams, there's been a bit of time actually over Christmas where I didn't really concern myself with football, which was kind of a nice refresher for me. I think it's fair to say, I don't know if you guys would agree, but I think it's fair to say that when you're this close to football and it's your every day and every night, sometimes for a couple of days it's nice to just ignore it, let it all slide and breeze. But yeah, just a quick shout out to James's YouTube channel again, King James on YouTube, friend of mine here at UCFB. James Macanjola. I believe it's actually changed though.
It's changed just to a normal James Macanjola, James with the Macanjola. Please go check it out. It's some great content there.
So his show is called Off Topic, features yours truly and some other guests as well. One of whom is making a Farr's Views podcast debut today.
Yo.
Timmy, who's also a student here at UCFB. You can find him on social media at
Timmy _ Lehin, LEHINN.
So, fellas, first off, I did just want to talk about fan perspective and what the general feel is around a football team that you support. I'm kind of purposefully making this as vague as humanly possible so that we can take the conversation wherever we want to. I have a couple of bullet points that I do want to bring up and just bounce off you. But what I wanted to talk about is just the general feel of what a supporter should be to a club. How you feel about when supporters change, when a supporter changes from team to team, whether they support multiple teams, you know, if you value the winning over the excitement. Like I said, I'm bringing up a lot of stuff because I just want to kind of take it over to you. So what's your kind of, what is a football fan to you? What do you deem acceptable and unacceptable?
I think that personally, the way football fans treat others, that you have to support your local team for the rest of your life, that's it, no other option, whether you like them or not. It's a bit of a nice, stupid answer as well.
Yeah.
When you grow up watching football and you see stars on TV, you don't choose your favourite player over who tells you to. It's more of who you just prefer.
Yeah.
So whether you support a team in another country, or another continent, that's up to you. That should be the case, really.
Well, I think the big thing is, like, and this, I've read a few articles on this recently, it's football's, this, and this is, I'm quoting this isn't my thought, this is somebody else, I forget the gentleman's name. This is football's last great taboo. Even though loyalty in the sport died years ago, clubs swap players and managers like top trumps cards, agents hold chairmen to ransom, owners focus ever more on the bottom line and their income, without so much as a thought for such lofty conceits as heritage and tradition. Even the fans, so often referred to as the victims of all this, are not blameless, merrily forgiving the latest Judas to cross some unspeakable divide, just as long as said Judas starts scoring regularly, of course. So basically the point being that you can do whatever the hell you want in the actual football, but the fans are the only thing left in the game that are still have a slight amount of loyalty to them. And what, you know, what is that about? Why should football clubs be looking at fans to get their loyalty? It should surely be the other way around.
It should be, because at the end of the day, fans, the money only comes from fans. The income, the tickets, the shirt sales, they come from fans. We pay so much money to watch matches, we don't get anything from return from it. Like, we watch our team and we lose. But we pay money for transport. Like, we're unique to us, we know a lot about it. But transport, ticket prices, some are outrageous as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for sometimes some matches are £150 to watch.
Yeah. Arsenal.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And some of us can't afford that. But you might just, you know what, yeah, I'll just buy it anyway and just do it because you love your team that much or you love football that much.
Well, I think the big thing for me, I'm reading, I can't remember which, I think it's the Stefan Szymanski book on Soccernomics, and he talks about the gentrification of football, which basically is where, so you had these rugby and these cricket supporters and they're toffs, right? They're publicly educated, they're rich, they're this, they all drive Land Rovers and wear barber jackets and drink beer in the stadiums because they're good upper class people. Football is the common man's game. It costs a fraction of your weekly paycheck. You get to go to games and that's all great. But actually, that's not the case anymore. It's changed, and you have to have 150 quid to go and watch a team. No, oh, not all teams, but you have to have a lot of money to watch a team play.
Arsenal.
Yeah, I know we're talking more at the high level with the prices in particular, but it still costs a lot of money to go and watch a League Two team if you don't live in the city and you're not a season ticket holder.
Well, going back to the topic at hand, what's it called, about fans having to be loyal, having to stick to one team or like support their local team. When you look at this here, the Premier, like with fans are having to support their local team, for me it's an English thing. It's not a thing where you go to other countries, like countries in Andalus, like countries in Africa, in Brazil. They don't support the local team because at the end of the day, they go there to see the big stars. Mm. And like the Premier League is the most watched league in the world. And listen, as an eight-year-old kid in the street, they grow up wanting to see your Riyad Mahrez play for Leicester or like your Cristiano Ronaldo. City. Listen, your Cristiano Ronaldo. Shit. How many like how many times do you see pictures of like, let's say, a bunch of kids in like a poverty driven country playing football? Why? Because they have a dream to fulfill what their artists have done and like what they see on the TV.
Let me ask you though. In those kind of countries where maybe there's not an established league and there's not loads of television and you're not getting the stars play there, if these countries did have big teams and big stars, do you think that culture of support would be much the same as it is here? I can't speak for France, Germany, Spain, Portugal, but I would assume that because there is that infrastructure of a high-level league, that the supporter culture would be much the same as it would be in England. Or maybe it's not. I don't know. I'm not speaking from experience there.
Well, if you take every other league, you have your Spain, you have your Germany, France. The majority of the time, they do support, what's it called again, teams, also their local teams or like teams in their country. But with like teams like in America, for instance, at the end of the day, it's not the most... glamorous. It's not the most glamorous thing to watch. We're not watching the most talented football players in the world, so it's obviously it's a thing where you have a drive to want to see the best, you know.
Well, teams move as well. I was listening to Tifo podcast, which actually you guys should check out. It's really good. Yeah, Tifo's amazing. And they're talking about how they did this one recently on the Glazers. And what the Glazers have done, they came into Manchester United with their history of owning the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And without spending any of his own money, Malcolm Glazer basically had some sort of argument, or probably better say discussion, with the city of Tampa and the state of Florida, and said, look, I'm going to take this NFL franchise, which you perceive to be this big cash cow for you, and I'm going to take it somewhere else where I'm going to get better tax breaks to build my stadium, where I'm going to be able to make more money as an owner of an NFL team in the city. And basically, Florida and the city of Tampa, they taxed its people to build Tampa Bay's new stadium and new training facilities. And what that led the gentleman on this podcast to think about is that with the US owners as they are in England, and you know, with the foreign owners who like to copy certain business tactics of other places, would there be a chance that if there's a big city in Europe somewhere that is willing to offer, oh, Old Trafford looks a little tired, maybe we can get a good tax break and we can make more money than we already do as Manchester United if we move our franchise of Manchester United to another city? Manchester probably wouldn't have too much of a problem because they've got Manchester City there, not Manchester United, so that might not be a problem. But the actual team itself could move. So to your point, in America, if they're moving them around all, so often, and there is no kind of local team, as it were, because the St. Louis Rams moves to Los Angeles and the Manchester United moves to, shit, I don't know, Leicester, Antwerp, I don't fucking know. I don't know. It's a difficult thing to contemplate, but I think it's something that may well happen in the future.
Personally, I look at it with the US side of sports business to the English side of it, it's two completely different. It's just two completely different sides of the spectrum. Because, as I said, in the MLS, there's no team that goes up, there's no team that goes down. It's basically
it's
a closed league. If you listen, if you can get your finances up, you're in. That don't happen in the Premier League. And would you really think, where a team as big as Manchester United, that someone's gonna have the gall to say we want to move this Old Trafford to that place because we want to, because we want to make a franchise? Manchester United fans, oh, remember? Do you remember when the Glazers, when they wanted the Glazers out, they had the scarves? Could you imagine if they want to mess around with their stadium?
Well, I think the thing, I think the reason why they'd almost be somewhat immune, not immune to it, but the reason why it would be no skin off their nose, is that in terms of percentage of population of fans that are in Manchester, you're not going to have, like, you know, the joke is, with, especially with Manchester United, is that all their fans aren't in Manchester, they're in London, or they're in, you know, down south, or anywhere else but Manchester, exactly. So you're not going to have this small percentage of Mancunian fans who are going to be annoyed. That tiny percentage compared to their rest of their worldwide fan base, which obviously if you believe some of the ridiculous statistics is like a third of the world population or some BS like that.
That's actually true, because when you think about it, I was thinking, when you look at teams and the followers they have, if I was a club, I want as much fans as I want.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want my fans to only be from Manchester, because if that was the case, we would not get anywhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, and this is the point. So if Manchester United move to a different country or some area where they get these tax breaks and can make more money and the team can be better, fans in Asia, you know, India, these teams aren't, they're not going to be annoyed. They're going to go, oh, wow, how exciting. Our team's moving and we're having a new, brand new stadium and we're going to call it New Trafford and we're going to have training facilities and all this kind of stuff. So I just wanted to kind of touch on it and make the point that I don't think it's the craziest thing in the world to think about when you've got the City Football Group, who own five clubs and have started now transferring players from club to club. You saw with, I forget the guy's name, from New York City, it's Jack Harrison, is it?
Even
Lampard.
Yeah, Lampard as well.
You know, it's all that kind of stuff is happening. So I don't think it's too crazy to think about. Now, the one thing I did kind of really want to talk about with this, though, as well, is when supporting a team, would you rather support a team that is exciting, that doesn't necessarily win all the time, or a team that's boring as hell, but they get it done and they win? And I kind of want to reference Liverpool as a really good example. I mentioned before we started recording, if a Liverpool football game is on TV, I'd much rather watch a Liverpool Premier League game than I would a Manchester City one, or a Manchester United one, or an Arsenal one, or a Chelsea one, or a Spurs one, hands down. Because whether they're losing 3-1 to Swansea, or they're beating Man City 4-3, I'm sat there going, damn, I'm engaged in this, and I'm loving what I'm watching and listening to right now, as opposed to we're Chelsea of a few years ago, and we won at home 1-0. Or 2-1. I'm just like, ugh, you know, I don't know what you guys...
I think, well, as a fan,
yeah,
you want your team to win, because no one enjoys heartbreak. Of course, you can speak for the Arsenal fans at this current moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
The club is like, it's like a seesaw, isn't it? Because as the time is recording, they signed Mkhitaryan,
yeah,
Aubameyang.
Oh, excuse me. I said Liverpool lost to Swansea 3-1 just then, didn't I?
Yeah, I got that totally
wrong. That was Arsenal. I apologise.
Yeah, actually, so like...
And Özil just signed a new deal.
And I reached a cup final. Yeah, the club is still in turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about...
it's exciting to watch, though. People are engaged.
You think about preference of watching football. To watch it based on how good you think it is down to your opinion, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because you could say the football purists like to see the Cruyff feminism, or maybe the modern day millennial wants to see more of, like, you know, end-to-end attack. But just what you want to see, isn't it?
What you want, yeah.
But... if you want to support a team that, yeah, we're playing great football, but we keep losing, but I'm enjoying myself, but in the end, there's still that heartbreak because we're not getting the result we want. And it's not really a great feeling to see your team concede goals and then not win. Because I think it's even worse to see your team play so well and deserve to win, yet lose.
I look at it from the spectrum. All three of us can agree we want to see beautiful football being played at all times. Yeah?
Yes. Yes.
Now, but on the other side of it, in 10 years' time, when this team plays the best football in the world, everything's said and done, and then they moved on to a new era, how many of you are going to remember them? because we only really remember the winners. Exactly. Let's be honest. Newcastle played one of the best football in 1996 when they should have won the league, but they lost it.
Yeah.
They played some of the most exciting football the Premier League has ever seen. How many of you really remember that Newcastle side?
You only remember Kevin Keegan, oh man.
Exactly. You only remember that. That's all you remember. You don't remember the incredible football that would be played. Arsenal, when we went on that huge trophy drought.
Yeah,
we were playing the best football in the world at the time.
But I think here's the difference. You say that people don't remember. None of us are Newcastle fans. True. I bet you if we had a proper Newcastle fan, and obviously maybe somebody who was old enough. I think I was two in '96. But like, if we had a guy who was around for the time who could appreciate it and digest what was happening, he'd be able to tell you we played some fucking good football in '96, and I was so proud of my team that year.
But again, Leicester winning the title.
Mm-hmm.
10 years time, we will all remember how Leicester won the title. Everyone's gonna know that. I was saying they had less possession
But that hit both points though for me, because that was good football, like as in exciting and engaging football, and they were getting the results.
Yeah, but like it wasn't like with Leicester's football, they weren't particularly like an attacking machine. I was blowing teams apart.
Yeah,
when you actually watch them, it was like smart football.
It was smart.
Like they had to. We're not gonna beat these guys. We're just gonna drop the bam, 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 bam. Counter attack.
Just remember,
and that was good to see in the counter attack. But for the majority of the game, a goal is only like what a spell of playing to a goal is like to 10, 15 seconds.
Exactly, yeah.
There's 90 minutes in a match.
Yeah. So go. And sure, coming to the end of Leicester's run, I think they won like 6-1-0 wins in a row.
Yeah,
where
true.
It was, you know,
Vardy's got the
one. Exactly. Or like Kamara's. But at the end of the day, we'll always remember that. We only remember the teams that win.
Yeah, it's true. You know? Well, that's the thing. There's only one name left on a trophy.
There's only one name left on
there could be a team before our time in the 70s or 80s that played incredible football, but they didn't win much.
I remember, what's the name? The Netherlands in the 2008 Euros, they won their first three games in a row. They smashed France 4-1.
But they knocked out by Spain, weren't they?
Yeah, no, they were locked out by Russia.
4-1.
3-1. I should have scored that day. I remember, yeah, this classic pose like this as a baby. But they played some of the best football I've ever seen. Robin flying forward, Schneider, Ruven Nistelrooy, Van Persie. And it was just the most exciting bit of football. And I was praying that they went the whole way.
Yeah.
But they didn't. Germany in the 2010 World Cup, we were saying when they had Özil coming through the ranks. Remember, they smashed England 4-1, the Argentina 4-0. They played some exciting football. We're not going to remember this.
Yeah.
But again, we will remember, Greece's boring way of winning in the 2004 Euros, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Portugal in the 2016.
They didn't play great football.
They
didn't play great football. If it was for new rules, they would have been knocked out.
Exactly. They found a way.
I was at the Poland game in Marseille. And it was like, well, first of all, the game wasn't great. It went to penalties. I think it was like 1-1. But, man, Renato Sanchez. Whew. Anyway.
What happened?
He was just watching it live and watching the coach not talk to any other player on the pitch. If you keep in mind that Ronaldo's also on the pitch. And just going, Renato, over here. Renato, over here. Renato, over here. Renato, over here. And he's just moving. He's playing right wing, left wing, cam, holding midfield, right mid, left mid, centre mid. Amazing.
Was that the thing where Renato wasn't good with his brain, or was it the thing where he wanted him in certain positions?
I don't think it was like, you should be doing this. I think it was purely tactical. It was just, you need to go over here. And he just kind of went, okay. But as obviously we've seen now, it's kind of not. It's kind of gone a bit downhill.
We'll speak about that one day.
Yes. So, moving on, just a slightly more modern discussion. I just wanted to talk about the future of football and how VAR may integrate with football and how the rules may change going forward. And basically just an idea for another form of entertainment being a possibility in the future. I just wanted to reference, and for those of you who don't know out there, Vince McMahon. I'm a big WWE fan, and Vince McMahon came out in a big press conference that he did recently. He has reignited the XFL, which is the Extreme Football League, and the aim of the game is to make it more family friendly. And they're going to take suggestions not from people in a boardroom, not from owners of the clubs, but they're going to take suggestions from fans, media, doctors, in terms of what they should do for safety. They're basically going to make it this kind of all-encompassing game and they're trying to beat out the NFL, and this will start in 2020. And what I am slightly interested in, and potentially maybe even concerned about, is if a very, very wealthy person or persons come together and they start a new brand of football. So it's still the game of football as we know it, with some slight rule changes, whether that may be appealing or whether it will just organically change as the game develops and more technology comes into the game. So I just wanted to throw these things at you and what you kind of generally thought of them, and then also wanted to get your insight on whether you think the game will develop to this stage, or whether you think it's kind of good where it is, it's been good as it is for a long time, and maybe we should just keep it this way. So my view was 30 minute halves, clock stops when the ball's not in play. So for substitutions, when Jose Mourinho is on the right hand side of the pitch and he brings off his left winger who's right in the corner flag, just so he can waste as much time off the clock as he can, that stops because the clock will have stopped to make the substitution. Also means that making subs late is kind of useless in terms of eating up clock time, and you'd use it more tactically throughout the game. No added time. When the ball is out of play, the clock stops. When the ball comes back into play, the clock starts. So for injuries, all this kind of stuff, there's no time wasting involved. It basically kills time wasting from the game. VAR on any decisions that are of importance. Cards, penalties, goals, offsides. More training on the advantage rule, which of course we talked about beforehand, and I'm sure we'll get into. And I just wanted to gauge your view of whether you think a modernized game like that would fit with the way it's looking at the moment. I mean, Amazon and who's the other company? Amazon and Facebook are looking to bid for Premier League football rights in a few years, potentially on a subscription basis. I don't know whether that will play into it at all. I'm just wondering if we're looking into this new age of football where instead of watching it on a television connected to Sky Sports or BT TV or whatever, you're actually watching it on your tablet or on your phone or on your smart TV, and you pay a subscription service to one of these companies with the new rules. What's your
thoughts? Like a Netflix thing.
Maybe, yeah.
But you're looking at that, like, when you watch other sports that aren't football, like I'd say ice hockey, most American things, so you have basketball, ice hockey, for example, even the NFL, they're not like boring, and they're exciting, but there's something missing from that that's in football, because in sports like that, you get like a buzzer beater, you don't need like last shot in and finish it, that's it, that's the end of the game. But football, it's slightly different, because there's something in the game that even years ago, like when it was first started, that the clock just ran through, and it was crazy. Like it was a freak moment, because if you look at things like, say, 90 minute plus at a time, the moments of shit that wouldn't have happened, like maybe the Aguero goal never would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are some things that when you take out, like it could be better for like the game wise, but remember, it's there to entertain.
Going back to that, you look at the 30 minutes, 30 minutes of lap stop every time the ball goes out or like mm-hmm. make a substitution. Footballers would be like, okay, I don't have to be as fit now because we have to pay for 60 minutes. There's more breaks, this and that. But again, we're taking so much out of the game. What, like, people must understand, modern day football and like what football was all about was going to the pub, or like going whatever and having a conversation about an incident that happened in the game. I get it, the incidents that happened in the game is enough, but the controversial moments are the things that we always remember.
So what you're saying is, and I think a lot of people would probably agree with you in this, is that actually the controversy, which everyone complains about and wants stamped out with VAR, subconsciously they actually want it in. Yes, they want something to talk about at work. So the anarchy actually makes it the game that we love.
It's
so
true
much.
Because like when if it's controversy, if your team loses, you got yeah. something to
exactly.
excuse
we,
about.
Listen, exactly. we are, listen, we are like, a, oh, we should have had that penalty in the 19th minute.
If we had that penalty, it's like, wow, how about we would have scored that? We would have been true.
It's not thing where the referee has kaboom, and then like he makes the TV sign.
Yeah.
No goal. Like, of course we knew that.
So I wonder then if it's not worth, and I'm sure this probably hasn't even entered their heads, but I wonder if it's not worth FIFA, UEFA, the FA, the Premier League, whoever, to go, we like it the way it is because of the controversy and kind of owning it, as opposed to, like, not in a sense of we're going to sneak in some controversial moments so it's a more entertaining product. No, but they're trying to make their human decisions without the aid of technology.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings are wrong. That's what we like about the game, and that's what we're going to stick to. I wonder if the whole conversation about VAR ends, if that is just accepted and owned by an official.
Look at that as well, because the FA, when they answer questions, the FA, like, it's the Football Association, so I mean, that this goes back years ago, almost 200 years now, when you think about it.
Yeah.
It's the 1800s. And these football teams have been around for ages, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But one thing they do, for example, because we're at Wembley, that's our campus,
mm-hmm.
and when you go to Stadium Tour and you ask them there, they say this all the time, the roof of the stadium would never close over for a match because they believe the game should be always played on an open field, over mm-hmm. natural weather. That's like a fundamental kind of like foundation, like a moral thing of what the game should be, because that's how the game was created. Mm.
Just like the way the game will never be played on turf. It was always going to be on grass.
It was always going to be on grass because that is the game it is. It will always be like a 90 minute thing, play through, 11 aside, referees, two linesmen. It's how the game was started, it's how it's going to continue on. We might change things like goal line technology, we might add another official, you know, different competitions, might slightly change rules to improve the experience, but the actual fundamentals of the game, we don't want to change that because we're changing the game. It's a different sport.
So let me ask you then, if a new league started with some rule changes, and maybe my rule changes that I've kind of just thrown out there are no good. Maybe they are, I just thought, those were just ones that I kind of thought, oh, maybe that'll change, maybe that'll stop things that people complain about so much. But as we've discussed, the complaining is what people like. So no point. But what if somebody came along and they threw in, like, it was purely a cup competition, massive cup competition, there was golden goal, the pitches were a bit smaller, there were less players, that, like, some sort of slight rule change that genuinely made the game more exciting. Do you think there would be a slow abandonment of the game that we know to the newer, more fun and entertaining style, or do you think people stay true to what they like?
I think you could play both.
You could do both, but I think the most important thing depends on stars.
Yeah.
Stars is what makes games, and stars is what draws you in. If big people or like big players go start playing that league, people are gonna wanna watch. I'm not gonna say
legends
who come out. I'm not saying that it's got people are gonna automatically move away, but it's gonna make that thing to, he's gone over there, so I guess I'm gonna take the lead because he's my favorite player. I think that's the only way how like it can make what's called again a league like that attractive. But
here's the thing. Just a couple of examples. In cricket, and I hate cricket.
That is so boring.
Cricket sucks.
Right? 8 hours.
It's like, and they still want games, like 4 days.
But this is it. Yeah, fuck this. You get 5 days, you get an ODI, which is a one day. They got 2020 cricket. I hate cricket because I just remember being, I'm pale as hell, to those of you who have never seen my face before. I'm pale as hell and standing in a field in the summer with SPF 50 all over my fucking pale skin.
I'm dark as hell.
Excuse me. So I fucking hate cricket. But basically what they've done is they've done something called 2020, right? An over is you get 6 bowls. There are 20 overs each. So that's a grand total of, maths. So that's 120 balls get thrown each. That, in comparison to those other forms of the game that were offered, is nothing. 2020 is so popular, it's not even true. And that is a variation of the original game, which has really taken off. And, you know, some may argue is more more attractive to fans and more entertaining to fans than any other versions of the sport. So with that as an example of something that has succeeded, do you think football will have the same kind of effect, or do you just think the game that we know, and we know nothing different, so maybe it's hard to judge?
The thing is though, I think the fact is that cricket already is boring.
True.
So we don't really find football.
But
I think you could add in like five-a-side is not as old as the 11-a-side game.
Yeah.
But we added it in for what we added in.
Yeah.
Just to something different.
Yeah.
But we still play both.
Yeah, sure.
This version could be 8-a-side. There could be something different because us doing coaching, my lecturer at my university anyway, he's a 5-a-side coach. He's been futsal for years. And what he said to us is that he learns things from that game and applies to the 11-a-side game as well. That can be the exact same thing with this as well. If there was an 8-a-side game with 30-minute halves and the stoppages, you could play it and enjoy it. And you could still learn more from that and apply it to the 11-a-side game to make that even more exciting.
Do you think that they'll be able to fill out arenas and stadiums the way football does?
Well, you look at 5-a-side now, there's a 5-a-side World Cup. The very start of that, people think of 5-a-side football, like how could you, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like basketball, football.
Yeah.
How would that fit out? And all it takes is for someone to play. Ronaldinho is a common person who plays futsal these things years ago.
Yeah.
But he just plays it and shows up. And legends, even now, will come back. I've seen Zidane do it, Puyol, Gerrard's doing it, but they just come back. What was the Star Sixes as well?
Star Sixes, yeah.
They just come back, just legends, and they just play it. That attracts people to, look, this player, remember him? What if it's Batistuta from years ago? What if he's putting...
It's when the money, when the money goes to the game that we see the stars going. And I think that's
these games might be created by someone who's got that money.
Yeah.
Someone's got that financial back that says, you know, I'm going to take a gamble on this. And because they may take a loss, because football, you know, football clubs always make losses.
Yep.
But if it's someone that rich, they make profits from everywhere else, and they just do it because they love the game.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think that kind of sums up on both points that, you know, with certainly in terms of a fan perspective, each to their own, and it's all going to be relative. And with the new style of football, new form of football that you're looking at bringing to the game, that as well, each to their own. If you don't like cricket, you don't fucking watch cricket. Even if it is 2020, you don't watch it. And football, if it does kick off, then it will bring the star power to it. And because it hasn't, that kind of speaks for itself. So to finish. As it is, January transfer window deadline. I have a deadline day, well, not deadline day, just a January transfer window quiz for you both. So we'll do kind of a, you have to say your name. So say Timmy or James, and then I'll go to either person first. And please keep your own scores. So question number one. Virgil van Dijk became the most expensive player signed by a Premier League club in the January transfer window when he left Southampton for Liverpool earlier this month. Who held the record before van Dijk?
Okay. For defender. Expensive for defender.
Became most expensive player signed by a Premier League club in the January transfer window when he left Southampton for Liverpool earlier this month. Who held the record
Torres.
Before?
Chelsea from Liverpool.
It was.
50 million.
Answer a bit quicker, but I'll give you.
Because I was thinking, I was thinking like, was it the defender?
Or
was it the player?
So Torres moved from Liverpool to Chelsea in January 2011 for a British record transfer fee of 15 million. So 1-0 to Timmy.
That turned out great, didn't it?
So number two, Liverpool signed Andy Carroll from Newcastle after Torres left for Chelsea. How many goals did Carroll score for the club before joining West Ham in 2013?
I remember his game against Man City.
I'm going to say...
And this will probably be a back and forth. Yeah, go ahead.
James, I'm going to say 23.
No.
Timmy, I want to say 15.
No.
I'm going to say 19.
No.
I'm going to say 14.
No. Okay, so I'll give you four options.
Go.
And wait for the fourth option, and then you guys can go through. 40, 4, 23, 11.
Timmy, 4.
No.
23.
No.
Timmy, 11.
Yes.
He scored 11 goals for Liverpool.
So, 2-0 to Timmy. James got some ground to make back up.
I need an Istanbul right now.
So, number three. Which American joined a Premier League club in January 2007 and went on to play in a European final without ever winning a trophy in Europe?
James. Clint Dempsey.
Yes. Good for you. Dempsey joined Fulham from New England Revolution in January 2007, played in the Europa League final in 2010, then signed for the Seattle Sounders in 2013, 2-1. The comeback
is
gone.
We all remember that chip against Juve.
Yes. As I sip my Carabao energy drink.
Exactly. Sponsored by Carabao. Drink Carabao.
Number four. Who was the most expensive signing of the January 2015 transfer window?
Oh my days.
The clue is way too obvious, so I'm not going to give it to you.
Okay. Let me think.
Like, if I give you a clue.
Wait. I'll actually. Who won the league in 2015? Was it
Chelsea?
Chelsea. Yeah. Oh my days.
Who was the most expensive signing of the January 2015 transfer window?
Oh.
And this would probably be another, like, you know, back.
I got it. Chelsea, James, Chelsea, and Juan Cuadrado.
No.
Was it? Because I feel like it was someone that could have left. But is this transfer into Premier League only or leaving?
It's from Premier League to Premier League.
Okay.
Premier League to Premier League.
And it was for £28 million.
Was it one match to me? One match?
No.
Oh my, that's what I was going to say too. Wow, Premier League to Premier League.
If this goes on for longer, I will give you the clue. But
Premier League to Premier League. I think
£28 million.
Manchester United were the one who made it. I was going to say Fellaini, but that had to be in the summer. Okay, let me think right now. Manchester United. Liverpool didn't make a big splash. Got it. Wilfred Bony.
Yeah, good for you. Nice. Manchester City signed Bony for £28 million in January 2015. Sold him back last summer for 12. Guess what? The clue. He is now playing for the club that he left in that window. That's fucking easy. Okay, so 2-2. The comeback is complete. Number five. Who signed for Manchester United in 2006... and was subbed off at halftime in his debut, a 3-1 derby James. Defeat at Manchester City, feeling as if Premier League football was like being in a washing machine.
Patrice Evra.
Yes, good. Nailed that early. Nemanja Vidic also joined United in that window, and he also lost in his debut 4-3 at Blackburn. However, both players went on to captain the club and play in three Champions League finals. 3-2 to James. Number six. Julien Faubert was loaned out by West Ham in January 2009 to which club?
To Newcastle?
No.
Julien Faubert, who is he? Wait, what team again?
Julien Faubert was loaned out by West Ham in January 2009 to which club?
Real Madrid? Because I was on YouTube watching. I was like Julian, and it came up of some of the worst chants of all time.
I'd have never guessed that. So you got it. He made just two
random guesses.
two appearances for the club and his 6 month loan deal and scored no goals. Good for you.
He was doing for actually. What's the call again? Going on his phone on the bench when like what? Yeah. Like, 4-2.
number seven. David Unsworth left Sheffield United for Wigan in January 2007. Why was this transfer to become so controversial?
Yeah, was David Unsworth? That's a question.
I've heard of him before.
This might be a tough one because, like, who the fuck gives a shit about Sheffield United or Wigan?
What, 2007?
David Unsworth left Sheffield United for Wigan in January 2007. Why was this transfer to become so controversial?
Never played for Sheffield.
I know Sheffield got relegated. I'm going to take a wild guess here and say that
I think that's what it's going to have to be because I can't really give you a clue.
He slept with the manager's daughter, so just something crazy.
The answer is the answer is that he scored a penalty on the final day of the season to keep Wigan up and relegate Sheffield United. Sheffield United have not played in the Premier League since that afternoon.
Wow.
Ooh. So that's actually huge. I didn't kind of hit
me. Imagine that wasn't going to change. The next season they stay up something. I don't know.
That's huge.
Champions League. Win the title.
Leicester. I'll just do it all.
Okay, so we've got three questions left and it is 4-2 still. West Ham signed three forwards. Benny McCarthy, Mido and Elam on deadline day in January 2010. Between them, they made 33 appearances for the club, which one managed to score a goal?
I'm just going to say, they were all dead.
They were all dead. I'm going to say Benny McCarthy.
No.
Wait, 2 out of 3. Who were the two other guys?
Benny McCarthy, yeah. Mido or Elam?
I knew he was dead.
Mido was decent, but I'm going to go for Elam.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh. When Mido signed for the club, West Ham co-owner David Sullivan described his £1,000 a week deal as one of the most amazing of all time. He made 9 appearances for the club, scored no goals, even missing a penalty in the process, left 6 months later. Amazing. Okay.
Oh, Mido.
So I do believe that means you won anyway, but we'll do the last two questions. Number 9. From which club did Chelsea sign David Luiz in 2011 and Nemanja Matic in 2014?
Timmy. Benfica.
Correct. Yes, I'm sure you both would have gone there. Chelsea have signed both players twice.
That's actually funny to think about.
The weird thing about it, David Luiz is actually on course to leave Chelsea.
Yeah.
In the window, so that's a bit weird.
And then go back. And
you're exactly.
Just like Matic. Number 10. Manchester United set a new British transfer record when they signed Andy Cole from Newcastle in January 1999. Which player went the other way as part of the deal?
I know the face is there. He was a part of '96. He's good at crossing the ball. He's a winger. Oh my goodness.
You know the worst thing is, right? It's not even like my generation. So the squad, like, you know, exactly. The, you know, like seeing them, but it's the squad you kind of like.
Is it like Jeff? It's James. Is it Jeff? I know the face.
Thing is, if I give you the list of options that I've got, it's really obvious, so I'm not going to. I may have to, but
oh my God.
Nah, it's too obvious.
I know, and you
yeah,
know
it's just good. Oh, this is the problem being born in 99, man.
Don't remember all that.
I've got 2 years younger than you.
Stab in the dark? Any of you? It's a tough question to straight off the bat, because the thing is, so this quiz is, you get like 4 or 3 options for each of the questions, and I've just clicked any of them just so I get the answers. Mm-hmm. And this, if you'd seen the list, you'd go, oh, well, him, but yeah. No guesses? It's Keith Gillespie.
Oh, my days.
Cole went on to score 121 in 275 games for Manchester United, winning 5 league titles, 2 FA Cups and the Champions League. Well, James, congratulations. Ooh. You've done very well for this quiz. Yeah, thank you very much for coming on with me, guys. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you very much for listening. Listeners, please be sure to give us a 5-star review and a subscribe on iTunes. Follow my guys on Instagram, Twitter and all that stuff. Do you want to give your handles again?
@Timmy_Lehin. Actually, not on my Snapchat, on my Instagram, but I'll find it right now. Well, let me sing you a song while I'm waiting to find it. Yes, my username is JimmyMac97. Go ahead, and the Mac with a K. No spaces.
And find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff @TheJackFarr. I'm James Timmy, as per, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for listening, guys, and I will talk to you soon.